Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's back to school, shopping time, and hard times all at once right now. Unemployment high, growth low, and American families with kids expected to spend about $600 per household on skinny jeans and book bags. Americans are saving more right now than they have in a long time, but they're spending too, sometimes in surprising ways. This hour On Point, the changing face of saving and spending in this country. You can join the conversation. How has your saving changed? Your spending? Where do you scrimp now? Where do you splurge? How's your standard of living doing? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Devin Leonard, staff writer for Bloomberg Businessweek. His cover story for their early August issue was headlined "The New Abnormal on Scrimping and Splurging." You can read it at our website, onpointradio.org. Devin, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So what were you looking at out there? We know Americans are saving more. I mean, they spiked in saving last summer. It went from almost nothing to like 8%. The latest I saw was 6% saving. That's pretty big for this country. It hasn't been there in a long time. What's going on in the saving and spending side?
Well, the story really arose from, it was an idea that my editor, Hugo Lindgren, had. I guess he was saying we're in the midst of a recession, unemployment is really high, and yet you go to a Yankee game, the stadium is full, you go to an Apple store, those places are full. You know what's going on? Are consumers schizophrenic in some way? So that's what we went out to talk to people about and to look into.
Yankees tickets aren't cheap, and Apple products aren't cheap. So what's this combination of scrimping and saving you found?
Well, we sent out reporters from Bloomberg to all over the country. It was an experiment. We've never done this before at Bloomberg Businessweek, but we sent people to Vegas, to Miami, the Mall of America in Minneapolis, which the story closes with. But there are a lot of people talking about their sort of strategies and sort of their I guess they wouldn't say schizophrenic, but we think it is. But they're going to these great lengths to save money. At the same time, they're splurging or patting themselves on the back for saving money, but then they're going to the Bellagio or buying iPads and it's just, we saw it again and again and again with the people we talked to.
Give us some of the examples you found. There's Ralph Ronzio in Orange County, California.
Yeah.
His condo was underwater. He finally just walked away, in effect. The bank foreclosed, and then?
Well, it's a little more complicated than that, but I do think Ralph is, emblematic of the times. He bought a condo, 5 years ago when he moved out to Southern California from Rhode Island, and then paid a lot of money for it. It's the top, height of the boom.
Mm-hmm.
And then he fell in love with a woman who had two kids, and he couldn't fit them all in the condo, so he went out and bought a house. He thought he could rent the condo, and he couldn't, and he was sitting there thinking that he was spending all his bonus money on on a mortgage that was never going to be worth the value of the house. So he said it was causing him all kinds of stress, and he got very emotional about it. Well, he wound up dumping the condo. He went to the auction. He watched it get auctioned off, but he felt relieved. They took the kids to Disney World, and he treated himself to an iPad.
So he's losing his condo.
Yeah.
He can't afford his house, but he's going to Disney World or Disneyland, and he's buying an iPad.
Yeah, but I think that's sort of an extreme example. But a lot of people are doing things in ways that they think. I mean, I also talked to a woman who made a about.
Yep.
Another reporter talked to her at the Mall of America, who was making a big deal about how, oh, things are tough. We're looking at price tags more carefully. And meanwhile, she'd driven all the way up to the Mall of America, with her kids from northern Missouri to shop for sneaks. And so I don't know what the savings are there.
The old normal, you write in here, before the new normal or what you call now the abnormal, the old normal for a while there was lean on the equity in your house,
right,
or condo to support everything.
Right. And prices were just going up and up and up and up. And you could always sell your house. You could always sell your house and pay off your debts. And then the bottom fell out. And I mean, that's what happened to Ralph.
So, but what are we seeing here? Are we seeing people who are actually hard up against it? And I was quoting earlier at the top, the Wall Street Journal reporting about Alice Splon and her husband up in Minnesota.
Right.
He loses his job, 2/3 of their income gone. Now she's sewing her own clothes and she's hunting deer for dinner. Now that's austerity. At the same time, we've got, and you report, Starbucks sales up, Apple sales way up, Mercedes-Benz sales way up. Now,
right.
I don't think that's Alice Splon who's hunting deer for dinner who's buying a Mercedes, or is it?
Well, no. I guess the point is that there are people. I mean, just because one out of every 10 people in the country is unemployed, 9 out of 10 are. I read in the journal the other day that the unemployment rate for people who've graduated from college is half that of people who didn't. So, I mean, the long and the short of it is there are a lot of people who have jobs, and there are a fair amount of those people who have liquidity. They have money. They're not over leveraged, so they're spending it. But at the same time, I think the thing that binds everybody together, and maybe not the example you just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
but we're now, I guess the recession is technically over, if you can believe that. But we're in a very slow recovery. It's going up and down. People, as you also mentioned, people were saving money in the beginning, but now they're getting tired of that. Or it's just so there's this pent up demand to spend, to splurge.
Yep.
And people aren't buying cars. They're not buying super big ticket items. But look at Apple. Look at Starbucks. And the luxury categories is doing great.
But you're also finding these kind of funny contrasts. You quote Al Moffat at Worldwide Partners saying, yeah. The dollar store is the new Target. You go in there to buy shampoo for $1, so you can go to Starbucks and justify spending $3 on coffee. So people are buying that off-brand, non-brand shampoo maybe, but still, that $3, hey, you can spend a lot more than that. Latte, you name it.
But that's the point, though. I think it's the people in the middle, the mass marketers are getting hurt. Because people are willing to go out and splurge on luxury or things that they consider to be luxury. I mean, an iPad isn't that expensive, but it has that cachet. I guess people feel it's a luxury, and then they're shopping at the dollar store. But in the middle, Walmart's been having a really tough time. P&G's been having a tough time. So I think those are the guys that are getting hurt in the middle of all this.
Interesting. Walmart earnings out this week, and they look pretty good. But a lot of what looks good based on their international business at this point. Devin Leonard with Bloomberg Businessweek. Stand by in New York. I want to go to Port Washington, New York, and Marshall Cohen. He's chief industry analyst for the NPD Group, author of Buy Me, New Ways to Get Customers to Choose Your Products and Ignore the Rest. Marshall Cohen, thanks very much for being with us.
Pleasure to be here.
So here's Business Week reporting all at the same time, gloom and muted optimism and wild abandon in the consumer marketplace. What do you see?
Basically, what's happening is the consumer's learning to trade off, not trade up like we saw before the recession and not trade out like we saw during the recession, but they're trading over. And really what's happening is they're making choices. They're sitting there looking at something that they're buying today as something that they're not going to buy later on. And it really means that as they weigh what they're doing, they really are very calculated in their purchases. In fact, I call it calculated consumption. That's the era we're in, where the consumer thinks twice and even three times before they make any purchase. They're asking themselves, well, do I really need this? Do I really want this? Maybe I can get this somewhere else for less. Hey, maybe I should shop online and do a little homework before I even buy this thing today. And then the other big thing that consumers are doing is they're buying for the here and now. They're not buying 4 months or 6 months in advance of when they're going to use the product. If they need the product today, they're going to buy the product today. And they're not going to put it on the shelf and wait a couple of months until they need it, which is why the hot season like back to school has been so sluggish to get started. And will likely go well beyond what the traditional rules of back-to-school measurement is. So we're going to have to learn how to read success in all new ways as we come into a whole new period of consumption.
Marshall Cohen, you call it calculated consumption. Can calculated consumption drive an economy? We've read again and again how 70% of the American economy was consumer-driven. What happens when consumers are really watching their back, they're trying to save, and they are saving, they're deleveraging, cutting down on debt? Can they still drive an economy in that calculated state?
Well, the answer is yes. Brands and retailers have to do a better job of convincing the consumer that the products that they're offering are new, innovative, technologically advanced, and going to make their life better. The reason why Apple is so successful is because they've convinced the consumer that whether you're looking for education or career or even entertainment betterment, you're going to be able to get this by using their products. And they're not inexpensive. They're certainly not the cheapest guy on the block. But what they do is they offer better service, ease of product, continued allegiance to the brand. They service it. They make you feel as if what you're buying is really worth the investment. And that's what other brands and retailers have to learn. I don't need another refrigerator unless mine is broken. But if you can convince me that by buying a new refrigerator, it's going to make my life better, it's going to take inventory and tell me when I'm low on milk, it's going to have a television built into it so I don't have to buy something else, product that does more than just one thing, or product that does what I need it to do but better than what I already have, that's what stimulates the consumer to spend. We have kind of gotten waylaid in this quagmire of product that's just the same old stuff. You can go into 15 stores and buy similar product, and now it just becomes a price game. That's not what's going to stimulate the economy. What stimulates the economy is newness, technology, and innovation.
So be great, or be a darn good bargain, or be gone, maybe. Marshall Cohen at NPD Group, author of Buy Me. And Marshall, thank you very much for joining us today.
Pleasure to be here.
And Devin Leonard at Bloomberg Business Week. Devin, thanks for your story and thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the new saving and spending patterns in this country. Who's buying what? Who's not buying? We heard from Business Week about what they're calling the new abnormal when it comes to saving and spending in this country, but maybe it's the new normal. Joining me right now, first in the studio, John Quelch. He's professor of business administration at Harvard University. He has written about marketing six ways to Sunday for a long time, a real global pro in this. John Quelch, thank you so much for being here.
Hello, Tom.
And with us from Cincinnati, Ohio, is Christine Moorman, professor of business administration at Duke University, founding director of the CMO Survey, tracks and predicts markets through the opinions of top marketers, author of Strategy from the Outside In, Profiting from Customer Value. Christine, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here.
So I'm reading, you know, from your colleagues and economists all over. I mean, here's David Simmons from Chartered Bank, says Standard Chartered. So the consumer is simply not in a position to drive the recovery. We expect more deleveraging, getting rid of debt ahead. People will remain cautious and hold off on buying any big ticket items. But then you just heard about all the, you know, glitzy stuff that's still getting purchased out there, Christine. Is that just Americans who still have jobs and have money, or is that people desperate of thrift to, you know, splurge?
Well, I think it's the case that some customers actually are spending or saving, but in fact, most consumers are trying to do both. And my opinion is that these customers have adopted a sort of new type of what you might call a compensatory approach to managing their budget. You know, they exert a lot of effort to save money by cutting coupons or searching for the best deal. But then these behaviors seem to, in turn, give these consumers the license to make more extravagant or indulgent purchases. You know, they reason sort of, hey, I've worked hard or I've been good and I deserve it. The problem is that, in my view, is that consumers are doing a kind of new accounting on how hard they've worked to save money, not actually how many dollars they've saved. So they think, well, I've cut these coupons to save money, to save on shampoo, so I deserve the new suit or the $40 skin cream. And if they did the accounting on how much they actually did save, it wouldn't be a problem. But they're doing the accounting on how hard they've worked.
On how it feels to do the saving they've done. It doesn't feel great, I guess, especially given where everybody had been, sort of.
Exactly.
John Quelch, I mean, that may be true. At the same time, savings rates, that's a real thing, and they're really up. They were 8% last summer. They're still 6% this summer. American savings hasn't been in that terrain in a long time.
As was said earlier, Tom, the U.S. consumer accounts for 70% of our economy. That means essentially and simplistically that if the savings rate goes up to 6%, you have essentially a 0.4% reduction in consumption.
What's going out?
I think, however, Christine hit the nail on the head when she talked about the consumer not being homogeneous. What we have is, in my view, at least four segments of consumers in the population, distinguished by their reactions to this downturn.
Okay.
First of all, I would say there are people who are slamming on the brakes. These are people who have been thrown out of work, who have lost their homes. Alternatively, these are people who are fearing that they might still be thrown out of work or lose their homes.
Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of people. That's the 9.5% unemployment. That's all that foreclosure, you name it.
This could be between 15% or 20% of the households.
Mm-hmm.
These people are simply not spending on anything. They might still be buying a tube of toothpaste. And by the way, that's important because if you look at the consumer goods companies that are still doing well, companies like Colgate are still holding up very well indeed. People do not stop brushing their teeth.
And they're not going to generic, baking soda?
They might trade down in a few cases.
If they're hunting deer for dinner.
I think that they're going to definitely need their toothpaste if they're hunting deer for dinner.
Yep.
The second group is what we call the pained but patient group. These are people who saw a big reduction in their savings values through asset reductions thanks to stock prices going down, etc. But they are pretty confident for the long term, and they're sticking with the program. They're not going out and buying a new car willy-nilly.
Mm-hmm.
They are searching much more, as Marshall said earlier, online. They are evaluating options, comparing price points, doing what he called the calculated shopping.
But they're still in the consumer game.
They're still in there when necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Then thirdly, we have the comfortably well-off, no doubt including yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And these are people who basically are pretty secure in their jobs and have not seen terribly much by way of personal impact on their own economy, household economy. What they are doing, however, not so much today, but certainly a year ago, what they are doing is out of sympathy with the next-door neighbor who was thrown out of work. They're not putting a new luxury automobile in their driveway.
Sympathy or fear that they could be next?
Sympathy more than fear that they could be next. But that can only last so long. And some of the points that were made earlier about luxury car sales coming back is related to the fact that, look, there's only so long I can show sympathy for my next-door neighbor before I've got to trade in my 100,000-mile vehicle and get something new.
Boy, you know, I have to say, in my circles, even people you would think should feel confident about their jobs have a remarkable degree of apprehension about, you know, nobody feeling rock solid about their incomes.
Well, certainly no one wants to publicly and ostentatiously project that, for sure. And the public projection of that is, of course, to buy a luxury automobile or go on a luxury cruise or in some other way engage in consumption activity that's really, you know, on the edge, but certainly emphasizing personal indulgence.
Christine, what do you think of this new profile, sort of, horizon of consumer types?
It makes a lot of sense. I agree with John. And, you know, in this recent chief marketing officer survey that I ran, it seems as if these marketing leaders agree that the economy is really changing and consumer behavior is changing as well. Last August, when we ran the survey, low price was reported to be the most important priority of consumers, 34% compared to 19% prioritizing product quality.
Mm-hmm.
This August, a year later, I didn't expect these numbers at all. We found that, in fact, product quality and low price are equally important. And so this actually, I think, is very consistent with what Devin and Marshall and John have been talking about, that, you know, consumers are doing all different kinds of things, and we see this sort of equalization of both price and quality in the market, allowing consumers to exercise the freedom to choose in ways that meet their needs.
So economize, but go for maybe what will last. I'm not sure what that is, or something that will help you have an advantage in this tricky new economy. Apple's net income up 94% in the last quarter. Starbucks has a 61% increase in operating income over the same time last year. And heaven knows, we don't have to have $3 or whatever it may be cups of coffee. But
I think a very important point, if I may, on Starbucks, for example, note that in the past year and a half, in part in response to the recession, they brought out their instant coffee via which you're in a position to purchase in Starbucks stores. And the reason they brought that out is because they realized that the habitual Starbucks consumer was having trouble coming in every day and paying $3
or
$4.
So buy something instant, take it home. Still not cheap, though. I read somewhere $9 for 10 servings.
Not cheap, but cheaper than coming to Starbucks for a barista-made serving every day.
Let's hear from our listeners. Salt Lake City, Utah, Cheryl. Hi, Cheryl. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi. What do you know? What do you see out there?
Well, we, like many families in America, have had our income, our household income drop consistently and considerably in the last couple of years.
It's no fun.
We have found a number of ways to counter that. One, I only buy designer coffee once a week. It's my special treat.
Okay.
Down from 5 days a week. That certainly does help. I only go shopping if I know that I have something specific to buy. I never pay full price for anything anymore. If it's not on sale, I don't buy it, or if I don't have a coupon for it. I am a coupon clipper, have been. And the other thing I find, the only way that I really can save money is if I have that money taken out of our check prior to us seeing it, because once we see it, it's gone. And then absolutely under no circumstances other than an absolute disaster will I pull that out of a savings account.
So do you feel, I don't know, deprived these days, Cheryl? Do you feel like your household has adjusted to a different standard of living, or you're just more careful? How would you describe it?
I actually do not feel deprived. I feel rather proud of the steps that we've taken and the fact that our credit cards, we still haven't paid a penny worth of credit card interest since our household income has dropped because we have reduced. So I really have a very strong sense of pride in being able to live within our means. I preach it to everybody I know, including our grown kids and our grandkids. And no, actually, I do not feel deprived. I feel that when I do and when we are able to buy something that we hadn't planned on being able to afford, again, it's a bonus, and it's kind of a treat for us having been frugal.
It's a thrifty way of living. Let me do a one-woman consumer confidence poll here. Do you see this new frugal fashion of living as something for the long term in your household, or you think the economy will change, your economy will change, so that you can, you know, go back towards something a little more loose?
I think that the economy is going to change, but I believe it's going to take longer than what most Americans want and what most Americans' length of patience maybe will be. I do anticipate that at some point, again, as the economy and our household income expands, that we will be able to increase our spending ability, but potentially, certainly, and again, only. But I don't ever see us going back to the same level of spending without consideration that probably existed before.
Cheryl, you're great. Your finances sound like they're going to be pretty solid, and we wish you very good luck with them. Patience and time may take time. Watchwords there. I want to get my guest response, but one more call first, if I may. Kevin in Suffolk, Virginia. Kevin, you're on the air.
Oh, how you doing, Tom?
Okay, what do you see, Kevin?
It's things that we had to do to cut back. I mean, my wife has a pretty stable job. I have a pretty stable job.
What do you two do, Kevin, if I may ask?
My wife's a firefighter, and I'm a truck driver.
Okay, great. And how's it look? What's going on?
Well, it's going well, but it's things that you have to do to cut back. My wife's job hasn't had a raise in consecutively 2 years.
And how about you?
I had to take a significantly smaller cut and pay job to my company moved out of state. I couldn't actually move out of state, so I had to weigh the checks and balances and stay in town and stay in state. The things that we had to do to kind of keep costs where our cost of living at, my wife, I'm so proud of her, she doesn't do the Starbucks thing as much anymore as she used to.
The Starbucks thing, right.
we had to make the ultimate sacrifice and decision this year and take our children out of private school, which was a great, grave thing for my wife and I to do because they've been in since pre-K, and my son's going into the fifth grade this year.
That is a big step. That must have been some long nights over the kitchen table thinking about that.
Long nights over the kitchen table and a lot of weeping from my wife because my wife's father is an educator, retired. And but for us to save it now and to put him in college later, we had to, you know, take the brunt of it now to put away for college now.
So where are you? Do you feel like you're suffering? Have you brought your debt down?
Oh, we brought our debt down significantly. I mean, I had to make a decisive decision when my company left and moved out of state. I taken some 401k money, which is a really bad thing to do.
Yep.
But I had to wait to checks and balances and pay bills off completely and get myself out of debt to the point that we can sustain ourselves without having a raise for, you know, a couple of years going on at a time. So decisions that you got to make, like you said, you got to sit over the kitchen table and you definitely got to think about them and hash them out. But I don't feel the suffering of it. We do things like we shop very, very frugally. We find the deal that the shopping mall. We don't do the shopping mall thing. We find the discount stores. Like, I don't want to say the names over the air. Like, you know.
Well, we all know them. It's no secret anymore.
The Kohl's, the TJ Maxx, right. The Old Navy's when they're running their sales versus going into the actual mall malls because the actual mall malls prices are marked up. The Kohl's prices are great. TJ Maxx, Old Navy, things of that nature.
Right. You're going right to the discount spot right there. Kevin, I really appreciate your sharing that with us. It takes us right into what's going on in a lot of households, pulling in the belt there, and it seems like you're really on top of what you're doing. Christine, in these two stories, and we'll hear from John as well, but what do you hear from Cheryl in Salt Lake City, from Kevin in Suffolk, Virginia?
These, I think, are very important indicators of where the economy is going. Two things I wanted to point out, that, you know, consumers are using a lot of alternative means to purchase products and services. Look at the, you know, the rise of places like Craigslist and eBay. These are massive structural shifts in our economy that allow goods and services to move really between consumers.
Right outside of the old retail structure.
There you go. And I think most people, most consumers, if you ask them, they would say they like to deal with other consumers. They trust other consumers. They, you know, they think they can get better deals from other consumers. And so, you know, I think it's a fact. And I think, you know, if American businesses, you know, are opportunistic, they should look at these trends and see how they could play a role in helping consumers negotiate these kinds of transactions.
And John, in these stories, what are you hearing, sir?
I think Cheryl hit a couple of nails on the head. One is that the longer the recession or the perception of recession lasts, the more likely it is that the coping mechanisms such as Cheryl described will become ingrained and will be continued even after economic recovery. And the reason for that is, secondly, that when you listen to Cheryl and to Kevin as well, the recession is actually forcing families to have discussions around the kitchen table about what trade-offs they're going to make and what their priorities are.
And some big ones. We're not just talking toothpaste
absolutely.
Brands. We're talking private school, public school, whatever.
Significant. Mm-hmm. Significant. And so it's helping, in a sense, to pull families together. And this is one thing we see in every recession, that there is a return to neighborhood, a return to community, a return to family. When the economy is going 1,000 miles an hour, there's no problem in terms of being out there on your own as a singleton.
It's a different story here.
But when things are tough, people have to pull together, and that's good.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the new saving and spending in America. Who's buying what? Who's not buying? The consequences, the shift. Christine Moorman joins us from Cincinnati. She's a professor at Duke University, big in marketing there, with us today from Cincinnati. And with me in the studio, John Quelch of Harvard Business School, all over marketing as well, written on how to market in a downturn for the Harvard Business Review. Lots of books and publications behind his big name. Lots of great callers here. Ray in Brooklyn, in New York. Ray, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling because I was listening to the other callers, and of course, I actually traveled this summer throughout the country and saw a lot of my family who are definitely having difficult times. But I also saw something else. I saw that this idea, this kind of environmental understanding of what I really see happening in Brooklyn, an environmental revolution and a spiritual revolution of people not wanting to buy, also because they see what's been happening with the oil spill. They see what's, you know, I think people have really feel guilt because of that, and see what's happening with the climate changes. It's really unavoidable this summer, I think, to recognize some of that. And I not only think that people are tightening their, you know, their budgets because of their monetary restrictions, but I also really do think that people are changing the way that they want to interact with the world. And I think that's going to have a huge impact on the economy over the next 20 years. And I hope that people concerned about the environment are talking to people concerned about the economy.
Ray, you're great. And I think you're really on to something there. John Quelch is shaking his head in the studio with me here. I mean, it's interesting, John. You know, you take a pause in a rate of consumption, maybe a forced pause, and then I hear a lot of people looking around saying, you know what, maybe I didn't need this or that, and maybe I shouldn't be buying all this stuff for exactly some of the reasons Ray's pointing out. But how does an economy that was built on consumption shift to adapt to that?
Well, I think that's a challenge, but it that shift it always raises new opportunities for new businesses and new ideas. This concept of simplification goes back some years, the idea being that you actually buy less than what your income level would predict that you would buy. And that has been motivated, particularly as we see baby boomers aging, by their realization that acquiring a large vacation home, for example, simply doesn't work out as you planned. The family don't come from all corners of the world to spend the summer
big white
with
elephant,
you after
maybe.
All.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of this, we are seeing a certain segment of consumers, this is independent and preceding the recession, but potentially accelerated by it, a certain percentage of consumers who are cutting back their consumption to a level that is below what their income would permit them to consume. And some of the motivation is this self-interest. I just don't want to manage a lot of complicated things. But a big part of it is what Ray has just talked about, and that is a broader environmental and societal impact concern. What we are finding in our research on major global brands is that these days people say that they pay a price premium for these global brands in part, because they expect those brands to behave in a more responsible way than their lower-priced, less well-known counterparts.
Though who knows if that's true or not.
In some cases it is, but when you see many of these brands now spending much more time on corporate social responsibility matters, BP notwithstanding, it really does, I think, indicate that these brands and the marketers running them, and Christine, I think, will have a comment on this, really are picking up on precisely what Ray is talking about and figuring out how to build those responsibility components into the purchase process for those brands.
I'm sure they would like to, but Christine, on the other hand, I mean, if this is really about some kind of fundamental cutting back, you know, Ray's talking about a kind of spiritual rectitude or consumption modesty, environmental modesty, but she's really talking about less consumption, period. I mean, how does that jibe or not with a consumer economy, no matter how much brand rectitude big companies can try and put together?
Exactly. I think there's two things going on. I do think that Ray hit the nail on the head when she said that consumers are interested in a new type of consumption. But I want to add to that and say that I think consumers are being very strategic about their use of products. If you look at all of the products that are noted in the article that you started with at the top of the hour, mm-hmm. the Starbucks, the new phone, the new TV, the vacation.
Right, the big screen TV in the family where somebody just lost their job.
Right. Consumers are buying these products because they want connections with other consumers. And they might reason that the new phone or the TV might not only serve their entertainment needs, but might also connect them with other people. It makes sense
to make them savvy in this economy. And this is plugged in, savvy, but I don't know, ready to be players.
Well, I think that's true as well. I think people see a lot of these technology trends. They want to be part of the sort of the social scene in that sense. But I also think that they're looking for products that serve multiple needs, that mm-hmm. serve their individual entertainment needs, but also will connect them with other people.
And this is why, of course, Facebook has done exceptionally well during the recession, mm-hmm. because people, when they are under the gun economically, do feel the need more than ever to connect with others. The best insurance policy that you can have is a social network
that will buoy you up if you're in trouble. Dave in Charleston, South Carolina. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I got a couple comments. Number one, I'm on the front lines of this whole thing. I am a 100% sales commission. I do advertising sales, business to business, and
right.
I'm telling you, I've seen my income go down 70% in the last 2 years.
Ouch.
And businesses are the same way. They're being very savvy about what they buy, and you better have value, and your value proposition better be there, and also your price proposition. And I'll tell you, it's made me a much smarter consumer. I was just talking to your guy and I was saying that, you know, I love thrift stores. I buy ties and shirts that I know I can get for a dollar. They look great. People, you know, don't realize what's out there. And my wife, who's an artist, was very frugal prior to this, and she's always made us save, no credit card debt, no debt whatsoever. And we're now positioned now. When the real estate market crashed, we bought 2 investment properties in downtown Charleston, and we're looking for a third one because we squirreled away a bunch of money when times were good. And my wife said to me, you don't need to buy this, you don't need to buy that, we don't need this. And she's always been this minimalist shopper, and you know, and she's really put that in my head, and it's really served us incredibly well.
A minimalist shopper right there in your household, and maybe a futurist as she was as well, Dave. So it sounds like she put you in good shape, but we hope some of that income will bounce back for you as well. And did you ever think you'd buy your clothes at a thrift shop, I don't know, a couple years ago, or is that new, Dave?
You know, my wife did it as an artist, and she was an artist, and she got me into it, and I'll tell you, you know, I love it. I think it's a great way to buy some really cool. I'm getting into really vintage clothing now, some, you know, the really stuff you don't
right.
see anymore.
That's
and,
great.
You know, you can go in there and buy, you know, I'm outside all the time going business to business, so I usually have 10 or 15 minutes between appointments. And if there's a vintage shop in the area, I'll go in there and grab something for my wife, something for my daughter, something for myself, if there's something there that makes sense.
Thrift Shop America. There's the adaptive American and feeling good, feeling stylish doing it. Dave, thanks for your call. Let's go to Cary, North Carolina. Mark, you're on the air, Mark.
Hey, Tom. Enjoyed the show. I do every day.
Great.
You know, I had wanted to say one thing, and then I'm switching gears. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I said I would say one thing. You know, my brother and I are very different people. You know, I went the college route, and, you know, got the student loans, got the mortgage, you know, a couple
yep.
of kids, got the car payment, living the American dream. My brother didn't go to college. He went to a technical trade school, learned how to build houses. He's built his own house, and we kind of represent, I guess, two Americas, really. I did it the dumb way. He's always been very smart.
You think yours is the dumb way now? College, house? I mean, that was the way. That was the main street.
You know, all I can say is debt is dumb. Debt is it's like prison, you know, and I think America's really waking up to this, you know, and kind of what I hear in this show, what I hear this excellent panel talking
mm-hmm.
about, people are rethinking how we want to live our lives in this country, and I see it kind of swinging back to, I guess, how my brother has done it, you know, he doesn't send anybody a check every month because he learned how to build a house, and he built his house. He works on his cars, you know. And I think in the long run, that's good for Americans. I'm not so sure that's great for our economy, though.
That is really interesting, Mark. I'm glad you raised that. I mean, here again is a kind of – it's almost a back-to-the-land impulse. I mean, John Quelch, does that send shivers, you know, down the industry's spine?
Well, I think certainly it does with respect to consumer durables more than consumables. So let me just again distinguish between, let's say, toothpaste and automobiles. Toothpaste, people are going to go on using it, buying it. Yes, they might buy a private label. Yes, they might buy a cheaper brand. Yes, they might make sure they buy on promotion. But they're still going to brush their teeth every day. The key problem is durable goods, discretionary durable goods, home appliances, big ticket items.
Maybe you
like
don't throw that washing machine out. Maybe you repair it.
Maybe you repair
Maybe you
it.
Learn to repair
In
it.
Fact, service technicians have had a very good run during the recession, repairing appliances and repairing automobiles. Of course, the automobile dealership repair business and service business takes over from the new car sales and cushions them somewhat during a recession. But I do think that there is an issue here. If you have postponed purchasing a new car and you were in the habit of buying a new one every 2 or 3 years, and you suddenly discover 4 years after buying your last car, the car is still
no
working
problem.
Pretty well.
Why was I ever doing
Why
that other
was
thing?
I following that mental concept of inbuilt obsolescence? Why not stay with the vehicle for a little bit longer? No, my social status doesn't seem to have gone down.
Right.
People aren't treating me differently because I have a four-year-old car instead of a two-year-old car.
Christine,
so I think the big challenge is for consumer durables manufacturers.
Exactly.
And there, what they have to do is bring out new products, innovations that prompt people to trade in faster than they would otherwise do.
But that means real innovation, not just a taller fin.
It means Apple Computer coming to Detroit.
Christine, you heard our caller Mark say, look, he wants to do more himself, not be so focused on buying, and he thinks that's great, but he's worried about what it means for the economy. I mean, if there's a new rhythm of consumption in this country, what about the economic side of that equation?
Well, you, the business referred to Absolutely. You referred to the adaptive American earlier when you were referring to the consumers. I think it's equally likely that we will see this kind of adaptation going on among American businesses. There's no reason to believe that if they pay attention to what consumers want and need, deeply want and need in their lives, that there's not a role for businesses to play. I mean, part of the problem is that a lot of American companies don't spend enough time with their customers. They don't understand, you know, how their lives are changing, what needs are unfulfilled, and how they can play a role in serving those needs, whether it's through technologies that connect them to other consumers or, you know, products that have a sort of luxury feel but perhaps aren't as, you know, pricey. I think there are all different kinds of interesting ways that American businesses can connect with consumers, and there's no reason to believe that we can't do this.
Everybody going to have to be on their toes here as this adaptation goes on. Spokane, Washington, Jay, you are on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have just a couple comments based around the fact. I'm from California, born and bred, native, and I live in Santa Monica, actually. And I'm a truck driver, and that's why I'm calling you from Spokane.
Great.
And I also have been all around the United States. I do all 48 states and have had a chance to see a firsthand, depression of the United States. And, my comment mainly is the fact that, you know, everybody remembers back to a couple years ago or about a year and a half ago when we had gas prices spike, you know, especially in California, around $5.50 a gallon.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, and coupled, you know, and what happened immediately after that, of course, I don't know if everybody forgot, but all your goods and services went up. And they all, said that they're due to the price raises for goods and services were due to the higher energy costs. Okay, so you saw people who may have had a savings, which I was not one of, use their savings, coupled with the fact that us people haven't had raises in our jobs or lack of upward mobility, to make more money, we've just been far stressed and far pressed to have anything. So we're just going from, just for what we need instead of what we want. And I'm speaking for the 98% of the populace of the United States, not the 2% that have money.
Yeah.
And can do whatever the heck they want to do.
Energy prices up, wages not up, and for a long time. And you know, here, John, just Jay, who driving 48 states and saying, looks like a depression to him, maybe not for that top 2, 3, 5%, but for an awful lot of people out there, that no wonder there's changes in savings and spending and consumption. There's just no choice about it for a lot of people.
There isn't, Tom. And what's remarkable, and I think it's come through in some of the calls, is the degree of resilience and adaptability of the American consumer and the range of different coping mechanisms that they have at the household level put into place. And I want to echo Christine's comment regarding marketers and brand managers not really spending nearly enough time with consumers across the U.S. To understand how these coping mechanisms are shaping the future of consumption behavior and how their product offerings, as Marshall said earlier, are going to have to adapt to this new reality. And innovation has got to be the name of the game.
Not only within this country, but if those export numbers are ever going to go up, as Barack Obama says, we must have to be right there too. Really interesting. A new dance between suppliers and consumers here, and consumers finding new ways to array their own household budgets in what was, maybe still is, the consumer society. Listeners, it's been great to have all of your calls this hour. Thank you so much for that. John Quelch with me in the studio of Harvard Business School. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much, Tom.
And Christine Moorman of Duke, today from Cincinnati, Ohio. Christine, you're terrific. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.